From Triple E Media, I am Miriam Mohammed, and this is Still the Backstory. You're listening to a bonus episode.
Hi, my name is Chi Okafor. I am the founder and CEO of Kendaki Honey, a company with social objectives that utilizes the apiculture, the production process.
In episode 67, we visited an apiary in Abuja to understand how bees are kept. In this bonus episode, we speak with entrepreneur Chi Okafor, founder and CEO of Kendaki Honey. She took us through the business of beekeeping, what you'll be needing in terms of funding, profits, and pitfalls to look out for. There's definitely good money to be made in beekeeping if you make the right choices. Enjoy the episode.
I'm a trained pharmacist and a recent graduate of from the University of Oxford, studying business administration.
It's interesting, beekeeping, a woman. How did you get into this business?
Mm-hmm. Actually, you'd be really surprised. It was because of another woman. I had come to Abuja. I worked within an NGO and I kind of left the sector at the time out of frustration. And one of my friends said, you know, the best remedy is for you to kind of regain a better understanding of Nigeria. Why don't we go around traveling? And so we went to a specific village and, you know, happenstance, we stumbled across a woman who was harvesting honey. And I mean, in hindsight, super naive of me and very ignorant, but I didn't know that Nigeria was capable of harvesting natural honey. I mean, and I don't know how much I am to blame to that, because when you do go to supermarkets at the time as well, specifically, they were always, you know, foreign honey. There was honey from the US, honey from the UK, etc. And so, you know, I was shocked. And so I, you know, took the time out to question this woman, and I asked her if I could have some of her honey as I watched her kind of harvest it. And this stuff was gorgeous. It was absolutely, the taste was phenomenal. I used it on my skin at the time. I had really bad acne, and it was like, it did wonders for my skin. And I left with, like, you know, maybe five bottles of honey, not that much, back to town. And when I got to town, everybody literally snatched it off of my hands. Like, I ended up with like none, essentially. So I called the woman. I was like, oh, okay, please, can I take up like whatever it is that you have left? Which was only two kegs, right? And so, you know, packed them up in bottles in Abuja, and, you know, people bought them from me. And so I guess, you know, I always say this is like the Igbo in me was just kind of like, yeah, there's definitely a business here, why not kind of explore it more? You know, I reached out to this woman again, and I was like, is there any way you could, you know, quickly make this stuff happen, like harvest another batch? And she was like, well, you know, you took everything I had. She was a small scale farmer, which typically tends to be the case with women farmers across Africa. They operate on much smaller scales than their male counterparts. You know, I kind of reached out to her, and I was like, okay, can you connect me with anyone else in the space that does the same thing that you do? So she tried her best and did that. And unfortunately, the batches that I was then getting from these, you know, these people that I'd been connected to were terrible, you know, to say the least. And I think that's kind of where the difficulties then started. And as I continue to then do my research, and this is me getting samples from all the way from Taraba all the way down to, you know, Oyo, I quickly came to find that, you know, a lot of honey in Nigeria is actually not pure and not, is actually adulterated. And then I, you know, started to research it, and statistics state that 98% of honey in Nigeria is adulterated. Nigerians don't know what real honey actually tastes like. and I've, again, being in the business, when you do bring about original honey, so many people kind of argue you down. That's one of the other big challenges. And I'm sure so many people within the business also suffer that. And I know that they do. Because you're bringing about, you know, a taste, a texture, a viscosity that isn't synonymous with the ones that they're used to and that they deem as original honey. And so, you know, you're told that, oh, your honey's, and people are very aware that honey in Nigeria is adulterated. So it's the other way around, because those that are producing original honey are in the minority. So adulteration is, in this term, is exactly what you think it is, as in honey that is not honey. And then the second aspect is, you know, honey that is extracted in the incorrect way. So poor harvesting technique. So in a 20 liter keg, for example, 5 liters of it would be pure honey, unadulterated pure honey. The remaining 5 would be water. But as you know already, I'm sure, honey and water don't do a very good job of mixing. So they'd use some sort of either gum arabia to kind of hold the water and the honey together. But of course, you can imagine the taste is off. And so you kind of top it off with either molasses or sugarcane syrup to kind of give it that sweet taste. So that's essentially what's, you know, in a 20 liter keg of honey usually is on the market. If there's bad water in, I don't know, whatever, you're going to get typhoid. You know, this is safe enough that it's not killing you, but it's not honey, right? So, and most times people who take the, you know, the time out to actually have honey as opposed to sugar are usually doing it because of, you know, the health, many health benefits or as an alternative. And so you're finding that they're missing that. As time went on, of course, having looked at all of these different batches of honey and finding that they were, you know, not up to the standard, I decided that, you know, the best, if I was really going to do this for real, the best way to do it was just to kind of do it myself, right? So at least I can monitor what's coming in and out of my farm.
What do you mean? What other things are in the honey that make it adulterated?
Yeah, adulteration is, in this term, is exactly what you think it is, as in honey that is not honey. And then the second aspect is, you know, honey that is extracted in the incorrect way. So poor harvesting techniques. So I'll just kind of stick with the first one first, get to the second one. So the first one being, you know, look, bees, the honey flow period only occurs, 6 months out of the year. And from September through to about April, depending, I mean, climate change has kind of shifted that around for us, but it's generally around that space. And only if you're really have had enough experience will you be able to kind of get two harvests within that space, right? Per hive. You have a limited amount of time, a limited amount of volume capacity, depending on, you know, your experience and, you know, where you're situated, the land, the availability of flora, et cetera, to produce, you know, an average of 14 liters per hive. And then, of course, there's the ability to have the financial capacity to have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hives to then, you know, run a business. And so in that, people will have very few hives, you know, very limited experience, and in the harvesting period, not be able to acquire that much volume, but still want to be in the business. The second aspect, as I mentioned, is harvesting techniques. At the moment, what really tends to happen is, you know, people will make hives out of clay and, clay or logs of wood, you know, the very natural way. I'm sure if you've ever been to the villages, I'm sure you've seen the very natural hives that exist in trees and stuff like that. But the problem is that when it comes to harvesting, the way in which these things are molded don't allow for you to use a smoker, for example, to kind of just gently, you know, make the bees woozy and then extract the honey so that you're not being stung. Instead, what happens is people literally just, you know, strike a match and then, you know, burn the whole thing to the ground, killing the bees, killing the queens, and then harvesting. And we're doing that first of all, your ash content will be out of the roof, I'm sure you can imagine. And I don't know if you've ever had honey with that kind of smoky-ish taste. That's exactly what that is. And then also, you know, you're also increasing, because the bees that survive, as you know, again, Darwin's theory of survival of the fittest, the bees that would survive out of that hive being burnt would tend to be the more sort of resilient and or more aggressive. And when they sort of reproduce, there is this, you know, reproduction of very aggressive and defensive bees. And, you know, the issue with that is that an aggressive hive, they are using a lot of their energy to defend off their hive as opposed to being productive and producing honey. And so you are finding that you are having lower production volumes on average per each hive with the increased aggressiveness of the bees. So it's super important, you know, that people start to see this as a business, but there's so many sort of moving parts that need to be addressed, because people from outside of the world talk about Africanized bees and how aggressive they are and how bad they are, but they never really take into consideration that during these harvesting, you know, processes, these are the kind of things that are happening. But another thing to also add as well is, in terms of the harvesting techniques, is that because people are not aware of the right, you know, the honey flow period, and there's not enough research into, you know, how climate change is affecting that honey flow period and when the right times to harvest are, people harvest early, and that's when you get fermented honey. If you know, one of the greatest aspects of honey is that if it's natural and it's organic, it never spoils. It literally never spoils. We only put a shelf life because products have to have a shelf life. So when you are having honey that does ferment, it's because, you know, actually when you were harvesting it, you harvested it too early. You know, and it's about really understanding the behavioral aspects of the bees and the mechanisms of the hives to be able to have a fruitful business.
All right. So beekeeping is actually very interesting from all that you've said. And I'm sure there are people that are thinking, okay, this is not a bad business. I want to do this. In terms of capital and other things, you know, sourcing for a hive, what should they look out for?
So the first thing is that, you know, to start off with, like many crops and many sectors within the agricultural field, you know, bees require a certain type of land. So first of all, would be the best place for you to start out, would be finding the adequate space or environment for these bees to be. Usually it would be waterland, so any land with like a stream. Believe it or not, bees do need to drink water to sustain themselves, as almost every water is life. So you would need to have sort of a stream around them. Now, bees have a flying radius of 5 kilometers. So you know, just kind of bearing that in mind in terms of access to this water. The second thing is the foraging capacity. If you know how bees pollinate, they kind of feed on the nectar of various plants, flowers, whatever. And they go back to their hives and kind of regurgitate that, and that's what kind of makes up the honey. So the foundation of the nutrients and the benefits that you're getting out of your honey is based on the foraging capacity around that area. So if you wanted to move into a speciality honey, for example, maybe you just wanted your honey to be cashew honey, then you would need to look at, you know, a 5 kilometer radius of cashew trees, you know, around your, you know, hives, and that, so that the bees are specifically feeding only on those cashew nuts. In terms of funding, you know, pulling a business plan from the UK or the US is just not the same thing as trying to implement it here in Nigeria. Unfortunately, there are several challenges around infrastructure. So, you know, if you do have a farm that's outside of town, how are you getting it into town? Bearing in mind that, you know, you do have like harvested honey in the back of your truck or whatever. It obviously wouldn't be ideal that you're on roads with potholes and twisting, turning, etc. And also, having a secure land. The third thing I would say is security. Now, the biggest challenge, and I know I speak for several people within the beekeeping industry and all beekeepers at the moment, for us is the insecurity. We're talking about farms being destroyed for the purpose of sort of, you know, theft of the honeycombs. In 4 years, we have had four fires on our farm. One of our farms, Fulani herdsmen, who have come, who have now have a better understanding of the honey flow period. They also understand the value of honey now, and the ease of stealing, of course, because if I'm planting, I don't know, beans or whatever crop, it would take me some time to be able to steal the crop of that land. And I presume if you set it on fire, you know, I'm sure it would probably actually damage the crops, which makes it difficult for you to sell on. But when you have hives and you set them on fire, what you do is either A, kill the bees, or the bees abscond, of course, and then you're able to kind of, you know, harvest in that way. So ensuring that you are in a secure area, or you have the funds and the capabilities or the networks or whatever to manage security. One of the ways that we try to deter that is that we built a full fence around the whole of the farm, which I don't know if I'm suggesting this, I'm not sure. That was super cost, capital intensive, as you can imagine. That was actually cost more than the actual land itself. So I don't know if that's advisable. If you could find somewhere where you didn't need to do that because it was secure, then that would be a really good idea.
All right, so to start a bee farm, like how many hives do you need to make at least enough profit?
If, let's say, for example, you were in your backyard, and I'm just going to make this so simple so I don't have to use my head. Let's just say we have five hives, right? And it costs you, because you were being modest, you said, okay, 12,000 for each hive. So that's 60K, right? And on average, if you are taking the time to dedicate yourself to those hives, you should have on average of 14 liters per each hive. So that's giving you a harvest over that month of 70. And if you do 70 times 2,000, because selling a liter for 2,000 maybe, that gives you 140,000. So, I mean, minus your original 60K, investment, minus, I don't know, maybe you have staff that you're paying I don't know if you have staff you're paying for five hives, but let's just say all of the other costs, operating costs, take away about, 15,000. You are still left with 65,000 profit. So it's very difficult to say how many ideally should you start with to be profitable. You will always be profitable. You know, the bees work for you. It's about, I think it's more about, how many can you start and manage with? I started with 25 hives and I stuck at managing with those 25 hives. I waited for us to be able to handle and understand what we were doing first before we scaled up. Agriculture is not a quick fix money business at all. Not in Nigeria, no way. Like, not anywhere. It takes a lot of time. So I think the first thing would be before profit, and you always be profitable, as I've just showed you. But I think before that, it'd be about, how am I managing these hives? Do I have the right staff? Do they have the right resources? Do they understand what they're doing? Can they actually get that average of 14 liters? Because bear in mind, there have been people who started farms and they only get 2 liters per each, or 3 liters, or one bucket per each hive. And that's because they're not, you know, someone is not there kind of monitoring it frequently enough. And, you know, that now the hive has been taken over by hive beetles and they're not aware. The hive is not healthy and they're not aware. So the hives are too close together and one has, you know, kind of overtaken the other hive. Or, you know, so it's really important to displace the other hive, sorry. So it's really important to start off with the idea that, yes, I want to take this as far as possible, but for now, let me just understand this business and then get it to kind of like the profitable phase, if you understand. I think the second thing as well is talking about looking at ourselves is one thing that I have noticed is that Nigerians, we love anything that is from the abroad is always better than what's on ground. And I can understand that to a degree because of course the regulatory processes, the whatever that, you know, all the health standards, et cetera, are obviously much higher. And so if you really do quote unquote want, you know, pure honey, then your idea would be to get it from abroad. Actually, you're wrong. Honey is the third most fraudulent, adulterated or fraudulent food in the world after dairy and olive oil. So this is a global problem. It's not just a Nigerian problem. It may be, you know, quite advanced in Nigeria, but it's not, it's a global issue. There is an actual fight against, you know, and I work with people, you know, in the US who have legal cases and legal battles against companies who are importing everything, products that have the name honey on them, but they're everything but honey. They're just high fructose corn syrup at this point, right? So this is a global thing, and there is a global awareness of people wanting more healthy alternatives, you know, and the real things and organic stuff and natural stuff. So, you know, I think internally, again, Africa always has the resources. And I think it's really important for us to start to see that actually we have the upper hand here. We have the advantage. And then also take industries. And that's why I gave you the example of me going out of my way and getting the organic certification. And the reason why I mentioned the organic certification is because that allows me to be one of the only companies to export, by the way. So, and I think it takes people like what we're doing to move the industry forward so that, and I'm not the only one, there's so many people within the space doing many things, by the way, but moving the industry forward so that governments and other can actually invest and see that, oh, these are viable business plans, these are viable businesses, and then there'll be a massive investment into these agricultural sectors. Right now, that isn't what's happening. So I think that's as a cultural thing, making sure that we understand that, yes, you know, of course the health standards and all these regulatory processes are much higher externally, but in terms of the raw, natural, pesticide-free, organic products, they literally exist here. They're just not large scale enough. So we need that support to make that large scale enough. There is no reason why Nigeria should not be, or any African country should not be exporting honey, you know, tomatoes, yams, wheat, all these other things. There is absolutely no reason. We have the land, we have, you know, we have the right temperament, the right weather. We have the human capacity in the thousands, right? There is so much that can be done, and just hoping, that's my vision really, is to make sure that to try my best to be kind of, you know, one of the leaders within that space to showcase that actually, yeah, it is possible, and this model can be replicated across all, you know, sectors, all crops, plants, whatever within Nigeria.
There's no doubt that agriculture is like the future of Nigeria. Yes, and you talked about, you know, being at the forefront. What are you doing to ensure that young people or people that are interested generally in beekeeping are trained, or are you thinking about training people?
What we do at the moment is, and it's still quite small scale, we work with associated initiatives to train beekeepers to be able to harvest to the right harvesting techniques, like how we do things, and then we offtake for them, and we work around with villagers so that they're able to, you know, immediately sell this harvested product. And why we buy from them is because we train them. So we already know that, you know, there isn't any funny business that's going on. And anyway, so the main thing for us is being that market access in these rural communities. We have farms in, you know, three different states at the moment. Payment happens at the point of harvest anyway. So there's no room for any of kind of that mixing and all that nonsense to happen. So that's what we're doing quite small scale. But at the moment we are, you know, adequately seeking for funding to kind of scale up, but also increase our production volumes as well alongside that. So that's where we are kind of currently, and that's what we're kind of doing on within the space.
Thank you so much, T, for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And a special thank you to Chi Okafor for sharing her knowledge of the business of beekeeping with us. This episode of The Backstory was produced by Rahmat Muhammad, Miriam Muhammad, Alexandra Gekwe, Dominic Tabakaji, and Sam Tabakaji. Executive producer, Rahmat Muhammad. Special thanks to Mala Iwa Badu Ikaliku.